The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
U.S. consumer debt just reached an all-time high, and it is over half of the national debt amount, coming in at $16 trillion.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Wow. You know, on Monday, I just want to give you a quick programming date. I'm going to be joined by Dr. Jennifer Roback-Mars from the Ruth Institute. That's a great great organization. We had a caller asking about contraception. It warrants more than maybe 5 minutes of time on this side of the clock. Peter Grandage is going to be joining me in a second here. So I'm going to dedicate some time, because it is really a slippery slope. We've seen the fruit of it. It has clearly led to a lot of what we're seeing in the culture today. And, of course, hopefully we'll have Archbishop Cordiglione on the air with us on Monday. We'll continue to take a look at the Eucharist and worthy reception and Catholic politicians and so much more. There's a lot to get into. Look, this is good news in this respect, and I don't want to go too off tangent here because we still have a lot to get into today. The bishops of our nation, since the beginning of this year, have started a three-year campaign to revitalize devotion to the Eucharist, because most Catholics have lost it. You know, they claim that Gallup, Pew, a lot of these pollsters come out that you know, 70%, 72, 73% of Catholics don't believe in the true presence of the Eucharist. Like, if you don't believe in the true presence of the Eucharist, why are you a Catholic, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. But it speaks to the problem that we don't understand our faith. If we truly understood the beauty of this faith and the sacramental life of our church and what Christ established, we would certainly be living our faith differently. Right, we certainly would. Nancy Pelosi would not be doing what she's doing, nor would Joe Biden or a lot of other people. And look, I got to take the giant plank out of my own eye before I take the speck out of anybody else's. We all are called to work on our holiness, right? We're all called to make sure we receive our Lord worthily. The Lord told St. Faustina, people approach the Eucharist like it's a dead object. There's probably been a time or two you've done that, right? I'm sure I have. We need to recognize what's on the altar there. So we'll talk more about this next week. I won't go too off tangent right now on this, but that's a huge news story. I'm delighted that the Drew Mariani Show could break that news for you, and we'll continue to give you the latest in the days ahead here. So be sure and join us. But we do have a lot to get into. The time in this broadcast, I'm telling you, it just flies. I will open the phones for you, too. You can get in anytime at 888-914-9149. I do want to take a look at what's affecting a lot of us, and that's our bottom line. I was in Chicago earlier today. I'm broadcasting today from the Green Bay affiliate. When I left the Illinois area, and I know gas prices all across the country are radically different, gas was $5.20 there. There's talk that it could go up to $6 a gallon by July or August, right? Now, I saw a report from Gas Buddy, and I'm going to reach out to them, get them on the air with me. They think it's probably unlikely it'll go that high. But every state in the union, I spoke to my daughter who's in Texas today, even in Texas where gas prices are notoriously low, over $4 a gallon. Chicken wings. I saw a report on chicken wings earlier today. How would you like to pay $34 for a dozen chicken wings? People used to throw chicken wings away, right? That became a big industry now, right? People love chicken wings. $34 for 12 chicken wings? I mean, look at the cost of things. My brother-in-law was visiting with me back in probably January, and we went out to watch a playoff game, and we're drinking beer, and I said, let's get some wings. You know, they were $23 or $24 on the menu. He's like, oh, don't spend that much. I said, no, come on, we'll get them. So I went ahead and I bought the, you know, I was buying dinner, and you almost spend that. We enjoyed it. But now $34, I wouldn't spend $34 on chicken wings. Are you crazy? On Wednesday, as you know, the stock market took a major, major beating. It took a body blow. The indices fell somewhere between 3 and 5%, right? Yesterday and today, the markets, you know, they kind of tread water. The S&P 500 barely avoided being officially put into bear market territory. That's not likely to last for long. And the main reason for this beating is that corporate earnings have they haven't been what the analysts expected them to be, especially in the retail sector. We talked about this briefly, I think, the other day. That, you know, Target announced a major decline in earnings on Wednesday, and what happened? Its stock plunged. And what happened as a result of that? It helped lead the rest of the market downward. But look, that's not going to be the only issue. Yeah, the markets are facing inflation, right? Inflation. It is running out of control. And that's causing Americans to turn to their credit cards. And I am really concerned about this. You know, credit cards are like quicksand. You get into that type of debt and you think, oh, I'll just fill my car with this. I'll pay it off with my next paycheck, or I'll just buy this now. We'll pay. Oh, we'll run our groceries here. And then something happens where you just can't pay the credit card off and you're finding yourself needing that credit card again. Before you know it, you know, the debt is rising. You're sinking in this quicksand and it's hard to get out. Credit card debt is rapidly increasing. And I just want to give you some heads up on that. Be careful, okay? Because a lot of people are beginning to see their credit card debt rise. People can't afford to buy things because of inflation. You know, your salary is going a lot less. It's going a lot, you know, you're spreading a lot less is really what I should say. Buying a lot less. But, of course, there's the problem of how do you pay that debt once it becomes due, because inflation isn't going to come down anytime soon. Elon Musk, I heard him say, you know, you're going to have this probably for at least another year and a half. So how long people are going to be able to shop at Target, Walmart, you know, for things like TVs or the latest fashion or whatever it might be that you're out trying to buy, that's a big question. The cost of products getting to the stores is going to go up. Those costs get passed on to you. On top of this, food shortages. We talked about the crisis in Ukraine, right? A lot of analysts, because the breadbasket of Europe, they export a lot of things from fertilizers to wheat, right? A lot of analysts are predicting food shortages. A lot of people, you know, in the city, sometimes they have this, they look down on the farmers as being unsophisticated, right? The farmers of this country feed America. The food you get in the grocery stores, you eat at the fancy restaurant, they come from the farmer. Fertilizers are up because of the supply chain issue right now. And farmers aren't putting as much seed in the ground because they can't afford the fertilizer or they're switching crops. So if there isn't as much seed, there's not going to be the same amount of food output this fall. And I think we're going to see a major food problem globally for a lot of countries, including our own. I think you're going to see rising prices and other issues. So with all of this, it's little wonder the markets are where they are today. And you are more than welcome to join us if you want to dial in. 888-914-9149. You can sound off. You can ask your questions to Peter Grandage, who joins me every 2 weeks here. He was once known as a Wall Street Whiz Kid. He calls himself the former Wall Street Whiz Kid. Wrote a book by the title Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. I'd recommend you read it, but I'd also recommend you follow him. You can go to Peter Grandage and Company. That's his organization. And his website is petergrandage.com. You can sign up for his newsletter. I get his emails, his podcasts, and a lot of his insights on the world of finance. It's good to have him with us today and to take your questions. Peter, welcome back.
Well, good to be with you, Drew. We haven't spoken in a while.
It's been a while. I mean, Chris Temple stopped by. A few other people have been here. We missed talking to you, Peter. I was looking at gold. I was looking at oil. I was looking at a lot of other prices, things that you have talked about. I think it might be a good way to start by saying I think you're right to say I told you so. You warned what was coming. You've said this pretty clearly. How are you reading things right now? How do you view the winds, and where are they blowing? What are we in store for?
I had told you last year that I felt I was going to be right, but I hoped I was wrong, because if I was right, the suffering that would be widespread. You know, I said before the end of last year, I personally, and then anybody wanted to listen, wanted to be completely out of general equities and bonds. If you remember, you were even surprised to hear that I would even say bonds, and I said, I told you that I thought they could lose double digits this year, and I said because I felt America had entered its worst ever political, social, and economic environment. And it would be hard-pressed other than possibly to say entering the Civil War that the country's more divided. This would be the second worst period. If you economic factors. We could spend hours on the phone now and not begin to cover the lion's share of it, and then look at the social issues that are all playing, coming together to create really a perfect storm of trouble. But it all goes back to what I told you and why I love being on your show, and I don't want to be on the major networks, which I used to be on all the time. And because what I'm about to say, if I said it there, they wouldn't have me back, and I've said it to you before. This all goes back to this country has continued to move away from the Judeo-Christian principles that once made it great, and fewer and fewer people, including in our own Catholic Christian faith, are God-fearing, and by moving away from that, we've opened ourselves up to the demonic warfare that's been going on since Christ first came here and has engulfed all parts of the world and life and is only getting worse. And I wish I could give a better picture. We'd always joke about how you would go home after, you know, because you were so depressed after hearing me, and your wife said, well, you had that Peter Granich on again. But the bottom line is, what we talked about and warned about is in front of us here now, and there's no quick solution. I wish I could tell you, wow, the tea leaves look great, you know, we're seeing the worst of it, in a few weeks or a few months' time it'll be better, but I think what we're seeing now is long-lasting, and there's a lot more, unfortunately, pain to go through before we can expect any real, sustained, legitimate economic strength through, you know. You heard me say how many times that this country was living on what I called, and I wasn't the only one that kind of called it, monetary heroin. We were borrowing and borrowing. You know my feeling about debt. I've expressed to you what that was going to lead to. And the whole combination of so many things now have put us really up against the wall, and I just don't see, other than short bear market type rallies and short windows where, in a sense, you stop getting beaten over the head for a short while. I just think it's going to be a big bear market. And one last thing, let me add, because I talked a lot about you. I said the other issue that we had, and I talked about extensively, was the inexperience that was existed in the professional finance community. I've talked to you time over time about how few real advisors were in it at any length of time. I always say that the guys and gals that are giving advice have only learned to drive on that one-way street. Remember, we talked about the traffic circle. What's it going to be like when they hit that? And we're seeing that. And the place where I took the most beating, because I was so outspoken, and you know that, was the cryptocurrency and the Bitcoin world. And I talked about that. You know, there were 22-year-old internet experts who, just a few years beforehand, the toughest problem they ever had to solve was their algebra test in high school. And people were listening to these people and doing everything they were saying. And now we've literally seen trillions of dollars lost in markets like that. And NASDAQ stocks that people raved about a year ago are down 60-80%. And so, I can go on and on, Drew, and then probably, like I said, I know anybody listening now, they want to do what your wife wants to do, just put your head under the pillow and hide. But unfortunately, these are real problems, and they're long-lasting, and they're not going away anytime soon.
All right, my guest, Peter Granich, if you want to join us, feel free to dial in, 888-914-9149. Ron is listening in Los Angeles. He wants to talk with you, Peter. Ron, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, brother from another mother.
Good to have you here.
I told the screener that at 61, I grew up in a household that basically lived on a hand-to-mouth existence. So I had to learn the basics of cash and carry mentality, and very little incentive to go for credit cards and that kind of thing. And there's just so much out there that we're put in position to want and not need right away. So that's basically how I've managed to stay around for 61 years, aside from my guardian angel and a few good prayers.
That's great. Peter, you want to respond?
Well, you know, what have you and I talked to about less is more? You know, I've expressed to you that the only book worth listening to is not mine or anything else or a guy ringing bells on a financial network, but the book that to many Catholics have dust in it in the house, and that is the Holy Bible. It is more in the Bible about matters of money and finance and how we should live than about heaven or hell. Half the parables are related to it, and there's not a positive verse in Scripture about debt and taking on debt. Doesn't mean that, you know, marginal debt within reason, you know, a house that's sufficient, those type of things. But again, this is an issue that has grown. We're going to have a huge problem about servicing the debt that this country now has. You know, if interest rates have to rise, as they say, to weather this inflation, at 5% only, we will pay $1.5 trillion in interest expense. And the best year this country ever had was in 2019 when it took in $3.3 trillion in tax revenue. So, again, I can stay on this line to the cows come home, Drew, and paint these real situations that have been troubling that people have masked or didn't want to talk about. But they've all come together at a time when, like I said, the social, economic, and political issues are acute and to me can only get worse before they can get better.
Well said. Ron, thank you. Tom's listening in La Crosse. I hope he's able to hear. I think we have a tough signal here. Tom, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, Drew. And hello to your guests. It's a very wonderful issue we're discussing. I'm 74. I was brought up very poor and learned money management and the problems of credit. At my age now, I try to invest every month in precious metals, and I'm at the point where I have a lot, and you know, the reason I did it was I don't believe in our current fiat currency system and the outcome of it. But anyway, I've been watching, for instance, the silver market lately has gone down. The gold has gone down also. And I realized that what am I going to do at 74 with all this precious metals I've acquired, because if you try to ever cash them out, you're just going to get some more fiat currency for them. I don't think I'll live long enough to have to barter with them, but it's on that.
Hey, thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
I want a postscript. What I've observed, we worry about the world economy and trying to survive in it. And I learned a long time ago before becoming a Catholic of God's economy. And I think that's what we're missing in the whole scheme of things.
Right. All right. Well, well said, Tom. Thank you for calling. Thanks for sharing that. And Peter, I'll let you respond to him.
Well, I personally last year actually bought gold for the first time in my life as a alternative to paper currency because of what I felt was coming. And while it may have been come off its highs, it's still up for the year and performed far better than any financial asset has in this now clear bear market in front of us. And so I personally, for myself, I not only plan on holding my gold, I also believe it still offers capital appreciation. That doesn't mean people should run out and sell whatever they have and buy gold and all. What I think is important is, and the gentleman brought something up, that sometimes people get too over optimistic about gold, that you're going to somehow need it to survive and buy bread and all that. If we get to that point, it really won't matter that you have your gold, because there'll be people looking to take it from you. So I don't think or believe in the Armageddon kind of philosophy. But I do believe in one of the things that's going to transpire. I'm 66. I'm a little bit younger than the caller. But I still think in my lifetime, if the good Lord has me around a few more years, we're going to see the U.S. dollar be moved away from as a reserve currency. I think one of the things that the war and the things that have happened and the coming problems with China has expedited people around the world to look at other than the dollar. And the reason is, If you're any of these countries, not every country in the world is our best friend. Many people are less friendly with us now than they were 10 or 20 years ago. And if you saw how we reacted against Russia and basically shut them out of the financial system, you would be concerned, well, would we do that someday to them? And therefore, should we seek out alternatives? And we're seeing that now. Right. We're seeing other countries dealing with each other through commodities or things different than the U.S. dollar. So I think that's one of the things when the dust clears, whenever this crisis, hopefully, please God, comes to an end. I think it's years away, but we will see a different type of monetary system in place.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Peter. And it has worried me a little bit because you figure if I was Russia, if I was China, if I was any of these other nations, Iran, et cetera, why not? The U.S. holds a lot of power with the dollar being the world currency. But I'm assuming it's going to be quite a while before that change could even possibly take place.
Drew, it's happening more and more regionally. We're seeing more and more deals being done. We're seeing China actually dealing with Russia directly, which it won't involve U.S. style. So I think it's the one thing that's been expedited by what's happening regarding the war.
Yeah, Russia wanted Finland to pay for its gas with rubles, right? It wants people to start paying in its own currency. So, yeah, it's a good point. Let's grab a few more calls. You know how quickly time goes. Mary is listening in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Mary, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Peter. I just have a quick question. I want to know Peter's thought on I-bonds.
Great question.
Anything that can help lessen inflation's impacting, I think, is a positive. It's the genie's out of the bottle. It's so foolhardy to hear Evans, one of the current Fed governors, talk about inflation being back at 2%. You know, what's really ironic, Drew, and our listeners, to see all the ex-governors, even Bernanke, all saying inflation's not only here, it's here to stay for quite a while. It's amazing that once they're not in the Federal Reserve, how differently they have an opinion of things. So anything that helps against inflation. One of, again, the problems with inflation right now is we still have a dramatic difference between current interest rates and where many know inflation's going to be, and there's really no sign really that inflation's going to go substantially lower. It may peak eventually, and it may go sideways, especially as the economy grows weaker, and that's where we get a word that, you know, the younger advisors didn't even know how to spell, let alone know what it meant, and that's stagflation. I was a young man, but I can remember what it was like. And so rates are going to have to at least get to or above that inflation rate. And if they don't, and the Federal Reserve decides to cave again and start printing money again, well, then we're just what the Latin American countries did in the 70s and 80s, and that'll be the death knell to us as the world-leading economy.
Yeah, Peter, thank you. We have a couple minutes. I know you're asking a lot of financial questions. I always like to get the faith in, but let me sneak one more question from Vernon Hills, Illinois. Steve has been waiting to talk with you. Steve, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi, Peter. Quick question I'm a younger guy. Well, somewhat. I'm in my mid-40s and still in the equity market. Would you suggest just cutting losses and walking away or staying within the equity markets?
The biggest, I'm in my 39th year here, and I can just tell you the single biggest complaint from people all the time over years is, hey, you financial people tell us when to buy, you never tell us when to sell. So I'll tell you how I always go about that. And, you know, I lost enough money in my first half of my career to be an expert in this, okay? Forget where you've been, forget the reasons you were, whatever you're in and whatever you have, would you first purchase it today? Going forward. And if you will, then you have every reason to hold on. If you hem and haw and say, no, there's no way, don't fall into the worst investment mistake. It's the best spiritual decision you can make, but it's the worst investment strategy. And that is, I only hope it gets better. I only hope it goes back up. Hope is a wonderful spiritual strategy, but the worst way to go investment. So whatever your situation is, and yours and mine and other people listening, is all different. So I don't believe in cookie cutter saying, well, you should be 20% stocks. And I've never believed in that. But look at what you have. give an honest, real appraisal. If I was first doing it today, would I do it? And if it is, stick with it. And if not, seek an alternative.
Yeah. Well, Peter, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always good to talk with you. It's been a while. I want to give you the final thoughts here because we're up against the clock. You always like to leave people with a spiritual perspective on finance. I think it's important in a time where the waters are very turbulent and a lot of people are very anxious right now. Any final thoughts for those who are listening?
Absolutely. You know, I live and breathe and I wear my Catholic faith on my sleeve. You must look at Scripture to help guide you. There's great teachings in it. And no matter what we get caught up in here, you know my feeling, the greatest video anybody can watch is called The Rope. It's by Pastor Chan. You watched it enough. Oh, yeah. It puts in perspective. Realistically, we really, as bad as we may think going to come, how long is that going to compare to our internal life? Work as your investment on your internal life and don't sweat out the natural life. That's the best advice I can give anybody, Drew. And also to your wife, sorry that you're going to come home, you know, with your head hanging down again.
Peter, always a delight. I can't wait till we have you back on again. I always enjoy our conversations. Thank you for making time for us, okay?
All right, Drew. God bless.
Have a great weekend. That's Peter Grandich. I've got to take a short pause. When we come back, there is other news coming out of Rome you should probably hear about. Pope Francis warning of a social emergency. He says the low birth rate is a social emergency. Let me fill you in on what he had to say. That and more, don't forget to check out Peter Grandich. You can get him at petergrandich.com. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
If fewer people are reproducing, next generation, you have fewer people to reproduce as fewer people are reproducing. Yeah.
I worked on a UN committee, it's got to be 10 years ago now, to help draft the UN Secretary General's report on sustainable economic development. And so I looked at all sorts of things like that because people have been beating the overpopulation drum since, well, it really kicked in the 1960s, you know, because there were dire predictions. By the year 2000, the Club of Rome came out and said, well, there'll be riots and mass starvation and mass movement of migrants and all the things you hear about climate change because there's too many people on the planet. And that just didn't happen at all. That was just that. It wasn't just wrong, it was anti-true. It was absolutely wrong. What happened instead was that everyone got way richer and the bottom section of the population in terms of economic distribution got lifted out of poverty. Inequality still exists, but that's that power law phenomenon we already talked about. Not that that's trivial, it's just unbelievably difficult to determine what to do with. I mean, all the countries in the West are way below replacement. Korea's way below replacement. South Korea, Japan, way below replacement.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, Italy's below replacement. In Russia, they were paying women, I think it was $9,000 or $10,000 a couple of years ago to have a baby. That was Dr. Jordan Peterson commenting on low birth rates and what it means for the human race. And I want to talk about this. I think it's really important that we get on the same page on this issue. Pope Francis, he made news the other day. He made the observation that countries with these low birth rates, like Italy, they're going to be suffering. They're going to be suffering soon. But it's the suffering, he says, not just of, you know, having a diminishing population and all that comes with that economically and the other ways. He says it's the suffering of the heart that people are going to endure. He said, you know, some people settle for, you know, mediocre substitutes like, you know, work or cars or travel or leisure time. But you know what I see today? I see a lot of people, and I don't want to offend anyone. I have a pet, right? But I think sometimes people substitute their pets for having kids. They refer to them as their kids, you know? It's like, you see how some of them treat them rather than being open to life. And I've always had a pet. Scout's my dog, you know? But I think what the Holy Father's saying is right. There's a substitution. They're mediocre substitutions for the tremendous gift of life. Here's what he said. He said this, and I'll quote him. This is a new poverty that scares me. He said it's the generative poverty of those who discount the desire for happiness in their hearts, of those who resign themselves to watering down their greatest aspiration, of those who settle for little and stop hoping for big, end of quote. That was pretty profound. Unfortunately, that kind of poverty, you'll probably agree, it's all too prevalent in our world today. I mean, the Pope was addressing a gathering called the General State of Birthrate. This was in Rome. And that meeting was there to try to figure out, how do we encourage people to have more children? I mean, right now, the fertility rate in Rome, or in Italy, I should say, and let me give you a perspective. Replacement rate for any nation is 2.1 births, right? So the replacement rate in Italy right now, it's 1.24 births per woman. It's 1.2. In order for a population just to maintain itself, to stay level, not grow, but just to maintain itself, it has to have a birth rate of 2.1 births per woman. So Italy's well below that. They're not alone. Over the last 11 years, Japan's population has shrunk by 2.5 million people. The projections say that they're going to lose an additional 18.5 million people over the next 18 years. So, you know, an average of 1 million people a year, that's like losing a city the size of San Jose every single year. Elon Musk even noticed it. He recently tweeted out, he said this, he said, quote, at the risk of stating the obvious, unless something changes to cause the birth rate to exceed the death rate, Japan will eventually cease to exist. This would be a great loss for the world. It certainly would. I mean, Japan is a beautiful culture, an incredible history. They've been great, made great contributions to the world. Right? Think about Italy. Think about a lot of these countries that are doing this. You know what I always found striking? I don't have the data in front of me, but I'm using my memory to recall this. The Muslim population, right? 8.1. Muslims have children. They're open to life. They're not only hitting the 2.1 replacement rate. Think about that. They're at 8.1. We as Catholics used to have huge families. Not anymore, right? South Korea, you got Russia, you got China. Many of these countries in Europe are either losing people over the next few years, or they will be in a big time way. Our own country, just to give you one final thought here, and we'll talk to Steve Mosher from the Population Research Institute. He's the president there. He'll be stopping by. Final note here, our own country, I think, is really, we are teetering. We're sitting on the brink of that kind of loss as well. And I think the Pope, you know, there in Rome, he's got this global view. I think that's why he's called this a social emergency, a social emergency. And I think he's so right. Yet nobody talks about it. We're in a contraceptive mentality as a planet, as a people. In this culture, we worship abortion. Look at the divide. Not everybody does. I don't want to broad brush it, but you can see how confused we are, how split we are as a nation when it comes to life. There's been a loss of respect for life. And again, this great confrontation is over marriage and family, over life. Steve Mosher's here. He's been a longtime friend. As long as I've been on the air, Steve has been stopping by and joining me. He is one of the world leading authorities on the population question, especially in China. And China's a nation to watch. If you want to learn more about him and his efforts, go to pop.org. That's POP.org, the Population Research Institute. Dr. Mosher, thank you for being here. Good to have you back.
Oh, I'm always happy to join you, Drew. And fascinating monologue there that brings up a lot of things in my own mind, as you might imagine. But let me tell you a little bit about my journey through the whole population explosion myth, because it began at Stanford. You know, I was at Stanford years ago, getting a PhD in anthropology. My colleague in the biology department was Dr. Paul Ehrlich. Wow. Ehrlich had written in 1968 a book called The Population Bomb that I actually had to read as an undergraduate. And later, of course, when I went to China, I probably was still enthralled to the idea that, yeah, the world has too many people and China's population is growing too rapidly. And in order to industrialize and develop, they probably need to bring the birth rate down. That's the idea that I went into China with. This was way back in 1979. I was not a Catholic. I was still 12 years away from becoming a Catholic. But what I saw in China was a one-child policy where the government, in order to supposedly fight looming overpopulation and conserve China's resources and develop, was limiting everybody to one child by means of forced abortion and forced sterilization. It was a horrible thing to witness, and I've been working on behalf of, you know, human rights in China ever since. But it also forced me to think about the population question. And I quickly came to understand that, you know, eliminating, as China was doing, millions of the most productive, enterprising, hardworking people on the planet could not be a good idea. You were eliminating the ultimate resource, even as a non-Catholic, even as an agnostic, which is where I was in my faith journey at that time. Mm-hmm. I saw that this was digging a demographic hole for the Chinese people that they were going to eventually fall into, and fall into what they have. China's population is aging and dying more rapidly than any human population on the planet. And now the Chinese Communist Party is desperate to get the birth rate up. Mm-hmm. And too late, they're telling people, go ahead and have a second child, go ahead and have a third child. And the young people say, no, you told us, you know, for 35 years, the children were not blessings, they were burdens. So we're not going to have more than one. And in fact, we may not have any. We may just choose to have a pet instead.
Wow. You know, Archbishop Fulton Sheen said that history doesn't reveal the survival of a single nation with a declining birth rate in a moment of trial and crisis. I look at Italy. I look at Japan in particular because their birth rates are just so low. Mm-hmm. China has a disproportionate gender balance there right now, but they're still a huge country. Let's talk China because that's really an area of your expertise. What does the future of that nation look like in terms of its population, its gender imbalance? And maybe compare them to the U.S. I mean, we're a much smaller country, but our replacement rate now is, what, 1.8? I think we're slightly below replacement, aren't we? So I'd love your
slightly
perspective on these two
nations. Slightly below replacement, but much better off than almost every other developed country on the planet. But before we turn to that, let's talk about China a little bit, because China has made a fatal error. It has aged the population. The population is dying before China really joins the ranks of the developed nations. And, you know, we talk about South Korea, where I've been, Japan, where I've lived, Taiwan, where I've lived, Singapore, the other Asian tigers, the developed countries in Asia, they all grew rich before they grew old. China is doing it backwards, and they'll never be rich. They will be old, and they will permanently cripple their economic development because there are simply too few young people coming into the workforce, and they've killed tens of millions of little girls. They've killed them in utero by sex selective abortion. They've killed them by infanticide after birth. They've abandoned them by the sides of roads to die under the one-child policy. Everybody wanted a son, Drew. They didn't want to have a daughter. They wanted a son to carry on the family name and support them in old age. So this massive kill-off of little girls means now that every young woman in China, and there aren't that many, every young woman in China would have to have at least three children to stop the population decline. And there's no way, short of forced pregnancy, that the Communist Party can ever make that happen. So that's where China is today. And Japan, the health ministry of Japan said a few years ago that unless Japan increases its birth rate, unless it increases its total fertility rate back up to close to 2.1 instead of where it is now, which is 1.3, that the Japanese population by the year 3000 will shrink from 128 million down to 500. In the year 3000, they projected there will only be 500 Japanese left. Now, I don't know, and they don't know how many people will be around in centuries from now, but it is a statistical certainty that if you don't have at least two children or more per couple over their reproductive lifetime, the population will shrink and die. And, you know, I love the Italians, 68 million Italians now. I'm going to miss them. But if they don't start having children, they will be 34 million in the next generation, 17 million after that. And you do the math. The population shrinks dramatically, almost by half with each generation. I remember being in Rome 22 years ago. We had our 9-month-old daughter, Chiara Faith Ann, with us, and we were taking her to meet her namesake, St. Clara, in Assisi, and it was a wonderful trip. But I remember boarding a tram in Rome, and a boys' soccer team got on board, and they all went crazy over our 9-month-old little blonde-haired, blue-eyed daughter, and they were talking to her and wanted to hold her and everything. I talked to them. They were all only children. They had no siblings. They were missing the love and affection that a brother or a little sister would have provided. And, you know, thinking about it was really sad.
My guest today, Dr. Steve Mosher. I've got to take a short pause here, Doctor. Stay with me. When we come back, let's open the phones. We'll talk more. We're taking a look at the Pope, his caution regarding what is a real crisis societally, low birth rates, and what it portends for the future. If you've got a question, an experience, you want to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. Feel free to pull up a chair. The number here to get in, 888-914-9149. I only have a few moments with Dr. Mosher on the other side as we're approaching the end of today's broadcast, but we'd love to talk with you.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So good to be with you. Thanks for joining us. If you are just tuning in, taking a look at something that I don't think a lot of people place a lot of thought on, but it's a very important issue, one that I think we should talk much more about. If you care about the environment, and a lot of people do, then you should care about fertility and population rate. A lot of people say, "Oh, the planet's warming. What's going to happen to civilization?" Yeah, when I hear that, and again, I think we have to be good stewards of the environment. I also think about, you know, this emergency, as Pope Francis calls it. He calls low birth rate a social emergency. And Thursday, he says that fewer and fewer children are being born, that Italy, Europe, and the West are impoverishing their futures, that this is an urgent and real social emergency. And I think he's onto it. And I'm not saying either one is more important than the next. I think they're both incredibly important. But from a spiritual perspective, you know, what did the Fatima visionary say? You know this by heart, because I say it a million times. Sister Lucia de Santo said the decisive battle between the kingdom of Christ and Satan will be over what? Marriage and family. Satan loves the fact that we contracept, that we abort, that we aren't having children, that we're not open to life. I had shared earlier that Bishop Sheen's famous statement about this is there's not been a single nation with a declining birth rate in a moment of trial in crisis that has survived. History doesn't record one of those. And yet here in this country, especially America, we've made personal decisions not to have children. And as Dr. Mosher's pointing out, there's been this myth that's been propagated about overpopulation, right? Oh, there's not going to be enough food. We're not going to be able to do this. Paul Ehrlich was wrong, right? He was totally wrong. But we are infected by a lot of isms today that have really, I think, deceived a lot of people. Secularism and materialism, they twist your thinking, you know, to think that, yeah, having kids is not a good thing, right? That people can hate what is positively good for them and love what is positively bad. That's how twisted our thinking has become. You know, that's the mystery of sin. Dr. Mosher joins me today, and we'll take a few of your calls. Doctor, let's go to the phones and take a few calls. Andrew's got a great question. I never thought about this, but let me get him in. I'd like to hear your take on this. Andrew's listening in Nutley, New Jersey. Andrew, you're on the air with Dr. Mosher. Go right ahead.
Hello, Drew. Thank you for having me on. My question to your guest is if you can speak a little bit to the effect that the transgender movement and homosexuality is playing on us, because it seems like that's on the rise. And obviously, needless to say, a man and a man and a woman cannot give birth. And, of course, the homosexual movement, you know, and the transgender movement, too, that needless to say, you know, you can't give birth there either. So if your guest could speak a little bit about how that has played an effect on this latest trend.
Well, that's a very interesting question. And, you know, it takes me back to the 1960s when the pro-abortion movement in the United States had not yet imposed abortion on the entire country, but they were strategizing. And one of their strategies was to encourage homosexuality as a means of reducing the birth rate, because, as you point out, two homosexuals cannot procreate. And, of course, you add to that the transgender movement, especially if you go into the not just the hormonal aspects but the surgical aspects, you're actually, removing your ability to reproduce altogether for all time by removing the genitalia in some cases. So both of those
I think, to drive down the birth rate. And I think both of them have been encouraged by what I call the population control movement, yeah. which thinks the population of the world is far too high and that will reduce it down to, say, 100 million. Now, given that there are many times that alive on the right now, that would mean radically, radically reducing our numbers over time.
Yeah. Doctor, thanks for the comment. You were breaking up a little bit there, but I think we got you back clear. Andrew, thank you for the call. It's a great one. Let me move to Jim in New Jersey. He's got a question about the border. Jim, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You got a question
for the doctor. I know they said our population in this country is reducing. It's less than 2.1. So in your opinion, would this administration or the government be trying to plan out to overcome that by allowing more and more people to come into our country through our southern border?
Yeah, interesting question as well, because the Pope mentioned Italy and Europe and the West as having falling birth rates. But that's true of Latin America as well. We have rates below replacement in almost all Latin American countries now, with Brazil, the big ones, Peru, you know, all well below replacement. And the only exceptions are a couple of countries right in Central America. So the Hispanic immigrants come over. They generally are only going to have two or three children anyway. The next generation of immigrants always falls to the American. So that you can replace the current population by immigration is a pipe dream. We have to have policies that encourage young Americans to get married and have children. And that way, that's the only way that you can really replace the population. You can't bring in enough people to stave off population decline. It hasn't been working either.
Yeah. Doctor, I'm sorry, wherever you are, your signal is beginning to fade
on us.
But thank you, Jim. That's fascinating. But it does, the immigration, when we're getting millions of immigrants coming across our border, whether they're legal or illegal, it does help to slow down, doesn't it, the depopulation of our country?
Well, think about the average age of the American population. If you have a baby come into the population and you have an 80-year-old person, the average age is 40. The immigrants who come over are not babies, as are some children, but most of them are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. So they're going to come here perhaps halfway through their working life, and they're not going to reduce the average age of the population very much. And very quickly, their birth rate actually drops to the American average. So, again, immigration is not a long-term solution. I think the reason immigration is being encouraged is for short-term political gain. And can I say that it's not just Latin America, the whole world, Drew, has seen falling birth rates. When you talk about the Middle East, the country of Georgia, 1.7, Qatar, 1.9, Turkey, 1.9, Iran, 1.9. Israel is back up almost to three children because they encourage marriage and childbearing. But many of the Muslim countries are actually now below replacement, too. The only exception is Africa. And why are birth rates still high in Africa? They're high because you have in Africa endemic diseases that kill one or two of every children in every family. Cholera, typhus, typhoid, dysentery. And so African couples want to have four or five children because they know that one or two of those children are going to die before adulthood, and they want to make sure they have two or three children survive. So if you want to reduce the birth rate in Africa, what do? You provide primary health care. You don't force abortion on them.
Well, we actually have a caller in Phoenix who's making a case about the Horn of Africa. Let me get Tom from Phoenix on. Tom, good afternoon. Go right ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering if you folks are living in an alternative universe. I think according to the United Nations, I think 25,000 people die from hunger every day. And in Afghanistan, they say just about everybody is hungry. Is suffering from hunger, and I saw a news item today on the television that they say that somebody's dying of starvation in the Horn of Africa every 48 seconds. There's starvation going on all over the world, and I don't understand this idea of underpopulation. And then the thing about Japan that if they keep this up, if by the year 3000 they'll be down to 500 people. No, but if they're overpopulated now, I think they should keep it up until.
All right, Tom, I'm going to hold you just for a second. I only have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. And Dr. Moshe, this is one of those arguments that you hear all the time. People are dying of starvation when you talk about overpopulation. What about those in Africa? Got that final minute, so I'm going to give you the final thought.
Well, the reason they're dying of starvation is because of internal unrest, because of civil war in Somalia, because of the war between Russia and Ukraine, which has taken us away from the grain that the great grain fields of Russia and Ukraine would have provided to the world, especially countries in Africa and the Middle East. It's war, unrest. It's government interference in the production of food that artificially drives down how much food that the United States is able to produce now because the price of gas and fertilizer has gone up so high that the great grain basket of the world, the United States, is going to see food production cut way back. That will cause hunger. But that's because of unrest, civil war, and government interference with the production of food. Without those things, we can feed ourselves and the world quite handily for all time to come.
Doctor, thank you for your time. Wish I had more of it. We'll have to have you back. Again, POP.org, right? Best way to get a hold of the Population Research
that's
Institute and track you down?
Yep.
And I've got several books. People right can read up on it as well. Sounds great. Hey, well, thank you, Doctor. It's good to have you. Check out his books. He's written a lot, and we'll certainly revisit this issue. I'm out of time for the day. Thanks for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. Until our paths cross again on Monday, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me.